Okay, we're starting here by the Mishnah on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. Mishnah says, "Ires et almana v'nitmane liot kohen gadol ichnos." So this is something we quoted actually before in the Gemara, that if the kohen gadol has a rusin kiddushin with an almana while he was a kohen hedyot, it was fine at that time, it was mutar at that time, but then he was appointed to be the kohen gadol in the interim before he consummates the marriage, before he has nisuin. Ichnos, he's allowed to finish off the marriage, he's allowed to complete this marriage. We had the limud before, the Gemara will bring the limud again. Umaseh b'Yoshua ben Gamlo, there was an incident with Yoshua ben Gamlo, a kohen gadol, shekideish et Marta bat Baitus, he had kiddushin erusin with Marta bat Baitus, umineu amelech deyot kohen gadol, and the king appointed him to be kohen gadol. Again, we'll discuss this incident and everything around it. Vikansa. And in the end, he was Kohen Sotah. I mean, he was appointed to be the Kohen Gadol after he had Erusin with Marta Bat Baitus. And then he consummated that marriage after already he was Kohen Gadol. Shomer Tiavam shenafla lifnei Kohen Hedyot. If you have a Shomer Tiavam that falls to a Kohen Hedyot, v'nitmane liot Kohen Gadol. And then he's appointed to be Kohen Gadol. Afal pi she'asa ba mamar. Even if he's already had done mamar with this woman, arizeh lo yichnos. Over here, he will not take her in, because the Shomer Tiavam is different than an Arusa. Arusa, he's really, in a sense, married to this woman. And because of that, he can consummate the marriage, because the only problem was Kicha, and the Kicha was done at a time that was appropriate. But Shomer Tiavam, there might be a Zika, but no more than that, and that's not enough to bind them together, that he's allowed to consummate the Yibum after the fact, where it's going to be problematic for him. So therefore, he has to divorce it, even if he's done mamar. Obviously, this is according to the deyot, that mamar does not have a tokev midoraita. According to Beit Shammai, of course, the din might be different with regards to mamar. Tan Rabbanan, minayin shim yireis et almana v'nitmane liyot kohen gadol sheichnos. How do we know that that's true? If he already has a sin with an almana, when he's a kohen hedyot where it was perfectly mutar, how do we know that he can then complete or consummate their marriage, have the nisuin when he's kohen gadol? Tamalomar ikach isha, ihachi shomeret yivam nami, isha velo yivama. So it says here, ikach isha. So the miut is that at the time of the kicha, she was already isha, his wife. And therefore, he doesn't have to divorce her. He doesn't have to get rid of her because the likuchin were done properly with an isha that was muteret to him. And since the erusin or the likuchin were done properly, he can consummate, he can do the nisuim afterwards. So the restriction against having an almana or a bi'ulat as a wife is only at the shat likuchim, at that time of likuchim. Since at the time of likuchim he was not a kohen gadol, it was not problematic for him. So therefore, this extra isha, the word isha here is extraneous in the pasuk, and that's the drasha to teach you, as long as she is isha bi'likuchim, then he can consummate the marriage. So Mar said, why not a Shomer Yavam as well? The answer is, Isha velo Yavama. Isha, Erusin, and Kiddushin bind in a much stronger way the relationship between a man and a woman versus the Yavama, which has a Zika, but it doesn't have as strong a binding as the Erusin, and it's not called Isha, and therefore it's Isha velo Yavama. Yavama is not included in that Likuchin, in a sense that she's already his wife. Maaseh b'Yoshua ben Gamla. So here, the Gemara tells us a little bit about the story. There are other places in Shas where it discusses it more extensively. It says, Mineu in nitmane lo. He was appointed by the king. He was not appointed by his fellow Kohanim or by the Beit Din. Amar Rav Yosef, Katir kechazina hocha. Katir is kesher. We see here a kesher rishaim, which is either a conspiracy, a collusion that was done here, which is Amar Rav Asi, Tarkava di dinarei, ayla le martyr but baitus le yanai malko. A tarkav is 3 kav, worth of dinarei here, or dinarei zahav, gold coins. So it's like a bucket full of gold coins. Martyr but baitus paid to yanai malko. Ad, demuki le Yoshua ben Gamla, bekanane ravrave. In order to make Yoshua ben Gamla the kohen gadol. In other places, we know that martyr but baitus was an almana. She was a widow, but she was widowed from a very wealthy individual. She was then wealthy, inherited that because she was the wife of this very rich husband. After her husband had passed away, she married Yoshua ben Gamla and then used her husband's wealth to ensure that he was the Kohen Gadol. I mean, that was for lefi kvoda, that she would have a husband that was the Kohen Gadol. There are other stories about Marta Bambaitos in the Gemara in Gittin, where it talks about Yerushalayim during the destruction of Yerushalayim, that she sends out her servant to go get food for her, and every time he goes out, she sends him to get something, he can't find what she's asking for, and she finally goes out, and she steps on a date, and she dies from that disgust of stepping on the date. Gemara says is one of the dates of Rabbi Tzadok, who was very sickly because he had been fasting for 70 years. He used to bite into dates and then suck out the juice to get him to be healthy again, to regain his strength. So there it says, quotes the pasuk in Eicha of Hanuga Becha, that even the most gentle or the most pampered of amongst you were affected by the Churban. That refers to Marta Bat Baitus. In addition, there are questions about her relationship with Yoshua ben Gamlo. Yoshua ben Gamlo is mentioned in other places in Shas that he did good things, that he taught Torah and he did positive things. The Gemara in Baba Batra mentions that he was the one who founded the Jewish education system. And if it wasn't for him, Torah would be nishtakach Misrael. Over here, the Gemara has a very negative view of Yoshua ben Gamlo. Basically, they paid off so that he could be the Kohen Gadol. So Tosafot in one place actually says that they're two different Yoshua ben Gamlos. But you could argue that it was his wife, not him. Others argue that he wasn't tzaddik, he was a good person. They were just people who are more ra'uy and more appropriate than he was. He wasn't the top pick for Kohen Gadol, but she ensured that he was the top pick by paying off the king. And others suggest that there was a little bit of interesting interaction here, which is that Yoshua ben Gamla had a rumor started that he was engaged to Marta Bat Baitus. And therefore, Marta Bat Baitus couldn't then be free to marry anyone because of the rumor that circulated, and she would need a get from Yoshua ben Gamla. So instead of doing that, she ends up acquiescing to marry him. But in that scenario, she wanted to make sure that he was the proper stature for her, therefore she pays off the king to make him a Kohen Gadol. So there's a lot of interplay of who exactly is responsible for what happened over here. What's clear is that Marta ben Baitus paid someone so that he's the Kohen Gadol. She is a very wealthy widow that ends up marrying him. So that's what the Gemara says here. But Yoshua ben Gamla, the Mishnah says, Mineu, the king, appointed him, and he wasn't appointed through the normal channels by his brethren, the Kohanim, and the Sanhedrin. And our next Mishnah, Kohen Gadol, Shemet Achiv, Kohen Gadol, whose brother passed away, Choleitz Velo Miyabim, performs Chalitza, not Yibum. He can't perform Yibum because the Kohen Gadol, and she's already at Be'ula. Since she's at Be'ula, he's not going to marry her, so he does Chalitza, not Yibum, because these aren't Isurei Karet, where she'd automatically go free. It's an Isur Lav. Right here, it's an Isur Asay, and therefore, she needs Chalitza in order to be released. She's an Amana as well. You're right. Kapasik Vitani. So the Mishnah says this without any qualification. Loshna Mine Rusim, Loshna Mine Nisuim. Doesn't matter if it's from an Arusa or from an Isua. Both of those would make her into a Shomeret Yavam. If her husband passed away when she was in Arusa, or while she was in Isua, either one, then she would become a Yivama, a Shomeret Yavam, and wait for the Kohen Gadol to deal with her. Bishlama min Nisuim, from Nisuin, Ase Velot Asehu. By Nisuin, you have two problems, which is what Yechiel just raised here. She is an Almana, which is a Lot Ase. She is a Bi'ula, which is an Isur Ase or an Ase. So I have an Ase Velot Ase saying no, and I have an Ase of Yibum saying yes. So an asay can't override an asay velot asay, so we say du chalitza nad yibum. Vein asay do chalot asay vasay, because of the fact that an asay is not strong enough to overcome both an asay and a lot asay. Ela mina irusim, when it comes to irusin, yavo asay vidchei et lot asay. But irusin is only one problem. She's not a bi'ula, so she is a bitula, the asay problem goes away. The only thing she is, as you pointed out, she's an almana. So now that she's an almana, there's only a lot asay to marry her. Asay of Yibum, lot asay of almana, asay doche, lot asay. Where it says, gzera bir rishona, atu bia shnia. It's a gzera that we saw earlier in the Masechta, that enochanami, the first bia, is allowed, because that is a biat mitzvah of Yibum, because the first bia is an asay doche lot asay. After that, the mitzvah of Yibum drops away in a sense, because he's already married to her, the consummate the marriage. Then every subsequent bia will be with an almana. So this actually combines different things that we've spoken about. One is that the almanah remains problematic even after he's married to her. Just because he married the almanah and did the wrong thing doesn't mean afterwards he can stay married to the almanah, because every subsequent bi'ah is a problem of almanah. Number two is, in terms of yibum, the mitzvah of yibum is the first bi'ah. But now the first bi'ah is also the consummation of the marriage, which will then, obviously over time, produce, hopefully, Yakum Hashem Achiv. But as Tosafot points out back on Daf Chof, that even though bi'ah rishona, for instance here with an arusa, where she is a bitula, bi'ah rishona will not impregnate her. So since bi'ah rishona will not impregnate her, why is that called a bi'ah that is good for Yevama? Because it's not Yakum Shem Achiv. You won't be able to make Shem Achiv. So Tosafot over there says that the din is a din in the Gavra. The man has to be a man that's ra'ui to the Hazria, and the woman has to be a woman who is ra'uya the Hazria. Doesn't mean that every bi'ah that they have has to be a bi'ah that can consummate and impregnate, but rather, it just means that they both are capable of having children, and that capability allows them to have bi'ah. So even in the bi'ah rishona, which will not result in a yakum hashem achiv, will not result in a child, the bi'ah is still okay because they're both ru'uyim to produce a child. Tosafot's proof is from the gemaras that we just passed, which were, when you have a bi'ah that's not exact regular bi'ah, bi'ah shelo kedarka, hera, those types of bi'ot where we say they're koneh by yivama, yet those aren't bi'ot that necessarily will impregnate. So Tosafot says, you can see from that it's not the bi'ah itself that matters. What matters is that these are individuals who are ru'uyim to produce a child. And the exclusion will be a nailonit or a saris, people who cannot have children, they obviously will not be under this rubric of ibum. It's a good question, which is that over here, the shem almanah is still there. It's just subverted to the asay of ibum. Therefore, after the first bi'ah is done, the shem almanah still exists and he has a problem. In the Mishnah before, where he was a kohen, he had joked when he married the almanah, then the shem almanah drops, in a sense of Easter, drops away, and then when he continues or he completes that marriage, there's no shem almanah. There's no shem isur associated with this woman. So in that case, the shem isur is not there. That's why he can marry her or consummate the marriage. Over here, the shem isur exists. We're just overriding the shem isur. But as soon as the override is gone, the shem isur is still there. So the next Mishnah says, Kohen Ejot, lo isa ailonit. A regular kohen may not marry a woman who cannot bear children. Now this is not unique to a Kohen Ejot. This is any Israel, which the Gemara will comment on. Elim kain, yesh lo isha ubanim. The only thing is, if he has children, he has a wife and children already, then he can do it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afo pishyesh lo isha banim. Even if he has a wife and children, lo isa ayalonit. He may not marry ayalonit. Shehi zona hamura batura. Rabbi Yehuda says that ayalonit is classified as a zona. We'll get to this in the Gemara, as what the halachic definition of a zona is. Chomim amim, ein zona ela gioret umishuchreret vishniva la bilad znut. Classification of zona only comes from bilad znut, which again, the Gemara will discuss what exactly is bilad znut. Gioret, which we discussed yesterday, this is the proof or the reason that Rashi describes the gioret as being a zona, and why he focuses on the issue of zona. We discuss what the problems with that are, and what the other Rishonim say. Again, the Ritva has the in-between or balanced approach, which says that the word zona here is not the classic sense of zona, but rather zona here is the zona as defined by the Pasuk in Yechezkel. And the same thing with Mishuchreret is a Shivcha Knanit, where, again, the Znut is a problem. Rashi over here says that the Bia Takum ve'Eved Pasla. The Bia from an Akum and an Eved make her Psula. Many of the other Rishonim say they don't understand that, because once she converts, then she's Ketinok Shinola Dami, or here Ketinoket Shinola Dami, and therefore those Biot should not have any relevance to her. Rashi thinks they do. Other Rishonim think that it's not the problem, and therefore they go in a different direction. But it's clear here, Rashi thinks those biot that before conversion, actually classify her as a zonah, and she doesn't lose that same zonah when she actually converts. Gemara says, Amar lei resh galuta l'Rav Huna. My taima. What's the reason in our Mishnah? Mishom piria v'rivya. So he says, our Mishnah is because of Piri Arivya, that's why you shouldn't marry a woman who's an Ilonit. So he says, a Piri Arivya Koanim hu de Mifkidei, Yisrael lo Mifkidei. Koanim are commanded to keep Piri Arivya, but not Yisrael. Amalei, Mishum de Kabai limitna Seifa. Now the reason that Koanim are mentioned in the Mishnah is because, aside from the fact that all the Mishnah we're discussing here about Koanim and Koanim and Gedolim, But the latter half of the Mishnah, which says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afal pi sheyesh lo isha, veyesh lo banim lo isa ilonit, shehi zona hamura batorah. Ve'azona kohanim hu demifkadei v'yisrael lo mifkadei, shum hachik tani kohen. Again, it's a parallel structure in the Mishnah. The latter half of the Mishnah in Rabbi Yehuda is only shayach by a kohen. A kohen is restricted from marrying a woman who has the classification of a zona. A regular Israel does not have a restriction from marrying a woman who has a classification as a zona. So the second half of the Mishnah can only be said about a kohen. Therefore, they mention kohen in the first half of the Mishnah. But it's not kohen exclusively in the first half of the Mishnah. It's any person. Any person who has yet to accomplish the mitzvah of period of rivya should not marry a woman who cannot bear children, because then he is foregoing the mitzvah of Piriya Virivya. Amar Rav Huna, my time with the Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says that Ilonit is classified as a zona? Why does he get that classification? Dichtiv, achlu v'lo yizbou, hiznu v'lo yifrotsu. The pasuk in Hosea says they eat and they're not satisfied. Hiznu, they have znut v'lo yifrotsu, and they do not burst forth. Yifrotsu here is used, pritza means to have children, to expand. So here you have a bi'ah without a pritza. And that's what the Gemara says. Kol bi'ah she'en ba pirtza. Any bi'ah that does not result in a pregnancy. Now again, it doesn't mean literally in a pregnancy. And Tosafot says it. Lo ma'it alecha dolo atri lo lam dechalal pirtza. It's a case where she'll never reach the point of pirtza. For instance, if you marry a ketana, then an individual is not restricted because she cannot become pregnant. Because in the future, she will have the ability to become pregnant. So therefore, the bi'ot, while she's a ketana, are not considered to be a bi'at znut. Again, very similar to the idea we saw before, that it's about the gabra. The people have to be people that are ruyim le hazriya, and therefore the bi'ot that they have will eventually result in a pregnancy. It doesn't mean every bi'ah results in a pregnancy, otherwise it's a bi'at znut. But here with Dailonit, there's no bi'ah that will ever result in a pregnancy, and therefore it's classified as a bi'at znut. So that's basically what the definition of zona here is. Not because she is a zona. The shame zona, according to Rabbi Yehuda, comes from something that is a bi'at znut. A bi'ah that is classified as a bi'at znut, and not a bi'ah that is, we call it like a purposeful bi'ah. And since there's no purposeful bi'ah over here, then it's going to be called a bi'at znut. And because it's a bi'at znut, that's going to transform her halachically into a zona. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kohen lo yisa taktana. Veleza says a kohen shouldn't marry a minor. Amalei Rav Chista the Rabba, poke ayin ba. So Rav Chista says to the Rabba, go look into this issue. De la orta baila Rav Huna minach. Because tonight, Rav Huna is going to ask you a question about this statement of Rabbi Eliezer. Nafak, ayin ba. So he went out and tried to figure out what the shita of Rabbi Eliezer is premised on. Says Rabbi Eliezer, sever like Rabbi Meir, v'sever like Rabbi Yehuda. He holds both like Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Sever like Rabbi Meir, dechayish lemiuta. He holds like Rabbi Meir, who is choshesh for minorities. Even if there is a small percentage or probability, Rabbi Meir is choshesh for that probability. V'savar like Rabbi Yehuda, and he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, damar ailonit zona havya. And he holds like Rabbi Yehuda that an ailonit is classified as a zona. So if a kohen marries a ketana, a minor, then there is a minor risk that this minor could actually be a ailonit, and therefore be classified as a zona, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore, he says, don't marry her, because there's a small probability that this ketana could turn out to be an ilonit, which would be a zona, and therefore you're not allowed to marry her. Right? If you didn't hold like either one of them, you wouldn't have a problem. If you don't think an ilonit is a zona, then it doesn't matter, because a kohen is permitted to marry this woman. If you don't worry about low probabilities, then you just go after the rov. You say, al rov, women are not aloniyot, and therefore he could marry her, assuming that it's going to follow the rove. So now Gemara says, "Uki Rabbi Meir mi savrla." Does Rabbi Eliezer really hold like Rabbi Meir? V'hatanya, katan viktana lo cholzim velo miyabim divi Rabbi Meir. Are minors, both a male and female minors, they don't perform chalitza and they don't perform ibum. That's what Rabbi Meir says. Amar lo Rabbi Meir, yafe amar tashen cholzim. We understand what you said about chalitza because it says ish k'tiv b'parsha. Says that it has to be an ish that performs the chalitza, and therefore, makshina and isha the ish, we have a hekesh between isha and the ish, and ish means a person of age, so both the man and woman have to be of age in order for chalitza to be performed. But parashat chalitza, it says, im lo yachpot ish takachat et yivimto, so that ish tells you that ish has to be of age, and then where there's a hekesh between the yivama and the ish himself, and because of that, they both have to be of age. Elamai taima im miyabim. Why can't they perform Ibum over here? Amar lohu. So he says back to them, Katan, Shema Yimtza Saris. The Katan, the male side, why can't he perform Yibum over here? It's because in the future he might be found to be impotent, and because of that, he will be a problem of Yibum. He can't perform Yibum. He's excluded from Yibum if he's a Saris, because he can't be Yakum Hashem Achim. Tana, Shema Timtza Ailonit. The Tana, the young girl, also because there's a risk that she might be an Ailonit. The Nimtza Pogim Be'erva. And they're going to be, then, they're going to be found to be Pogim Be'erva. If this individual is found to be impotent, then it's going to be a problem, because he is now performing Yibum Shaloba Makom Mitzvah, because he is a Saris, and that would be Pogim Be'erva, it's Eishadach. On the other hand, if the woman is found to be an Ailonit, she'd also be problematic. That's a very low probability. But Rabbi Meir's Choshesh the Miuta. Rabbi Meir's Choshesh for small probabilities. And therefore he says they can't perform Yibum until we're certain that they can actually consummate and produce children. But we have another brayta that says a ktana is allowed to perform Yibum, but not perform Chalitza. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So it's clear here that Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with Rabbi Meir about Choshesh the Miuta, because Rabbi Eliezer allows them to perform Yibum when there's a ktana, whereas Rabbi Meir would not allow a ktana to perform Yibum because of that low probability risk that she is an Ailonit. So it's clear, number one, that Rabbi Eliezer doesn't hold like Rabbi Meir, so that undermines part of your thesis about what Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is. Uke Rabbi Yehuda mi savarla. Number two is, you really think he holds like Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda says that Ailonit is a zona. That too is problematic. Vatanya, zona. Now, zona here is the halachic definition of zona. It's not the colloquial use of zona, because the Torah, the Tanakh, has zona all over the place, and it's used basically to mean a woman for hire. That's the general usage of the word zona. There is one other usage generally, which is the usage of ishidish. Those are the two places that you generally find the word zona, or zinu, is around the extramarital affair of an ishidish, and around a woman who is out for hire. But here we're dealing with the halachic definition of zona. So that's it. Number one is zona kishma, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that a zona is like what she says, a zona. So now here Rashi says that that means kishma, miloshon to'a, shetu'ad mitachet bala le'achirim. That she, zona, zana means to go off the derech, to depart from the straight path. So therefore, who's that? That's someone who is an eshet ish, that goes off the path, has an extramarital affair. And the examples of that are brought in the Nevi'im, who describe B'nai Yisrael's worship of Avodah Zarah, their infidelity, as being compared to a zona, to a woman who is not faithful to her husband. So that's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Rabbi Kiva Omer, zona zumufkeret. Zona is a woman who is mufkeret, free. Now, mufkeret here will be different. It's not that she has one bi'ah. Mufkeret is that she has bi'ah with multiple men. That she's mufkar leznut, the biat leznut. And that's what's called a zona. Rabbi Matya ben Harash Omer, afilu halach balala shkuta. Even if this woman was suspected of having an extramarital affair, a sota, and he's taking her up to give her to drink, ubala bederech, and then her husband has biat with her on the way, asa zona, makes her into a zona, because it's an illegal marriage or illegal biat. Right, so that illegal bi'ah makes her into a zona. Any improper bi'ah that she's not supposed to have will make her into a zona. Here, her husband is restricted from being together with her, therefore she'll be classified as a zona if her husband has bi'ah with her. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, zona zu ailonit. So here's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, contrasted with Rabbi Eliezer, who already spoke in the Mishnah. So it's clear that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehuda don't agree. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, zona zu ailonit, Rabbi Eliezer already said, the only zona is kishma. That's what a zona is. That's our Mishnah. Those are the Chachamim of our Mishnah, who say that a zona is produced either through a Gioret Mishukheret, a Shifcha Knanit that was free, or Bilad Znut. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Panoi Habal Pnuya, Shalol Hashem Yishut, Asa Zona. So Rabbi Elazar says here, a single man, single woman that have Biyah, they are classified as zona. So as opposed to Rabbi Kiva, who says she has to be Mufkeret, which is that one bia is not going to make her into a zona. Here, according to Rabbi Lazar, even one bia, having bia outside the context of marriage, is considered to be znot. Now, as Tosfos points out, not that it has to be dafka panoi, it's kosher kain if she's married. He's not saying that to the exclusion of a married woman. Of course, if a married woman's a zona. But here, even a single woman will be classified as a zona if she has bia. So clearly, Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is not premised on him holding like Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, because he holds like neither of them. He doesn't hold like Rabbi Meir that is choshesh to low probabilities. He doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda that a zonah is classified as someone who marries an ilonit. Ela amar of adar ba'avo, hacha b'koin gadol askinan. That it's talking about a koin gadol, not a koin hajot. Rabbi Eliezer's statement is not about a koin hajot, but rather about a koin gadol. So the Gemara says, emat kani lo. When does he have a kinyan on this woman? B'chigado, when she gets to be of age. When he marries her, when she's a ketana, he doesn't have a kinyan with her. He only has a kinyan with her once she comes of age. Bulahi. By the time she comes of age, she's already a bula because he's had bia with her while she was a ketana. So Amarova, chali leiv. These guys, yeah, you're wiping out my heart. I have a faint of heart. My heart is fluttering here. How could you say these things? Idikat shavua. If her father accepted kiddushin on behalf, me'ayishatahu dekonila. Then from the time she's a ketana, that's a kiddushin d'oraita when her father accepts on her behalf. And you have Kiddushin d'oraita, and she's married at that point in time without any questions. V'idikadsho nafsha. If she married herself off, ha Rabbi Eliezer hi v'lo Rabbonon, then it's only Rabbi Eliezer holds this, not the Rabbonon. So let's separate between the issues. First of all, if her father marries her off, she has Kiddushin d'oraita. When he has the Kiddushin, he has the bia with her. That bia is koneh. He has Nisuin. And Nisuin were done when she was a bitula. There's no problem. Even when she grows up and gets older, that makes no difference. The other possibility is that she married herself off, or her brother or mother married her up. She's only married midrabanan. So that would present a problem, because if she only married midrabanan, and then he has bia with her now, midrabanan, when she comes of age, that will then consummate the marriage d'oraita, or create the marriage d'oraita, and that bia will be with a biula, and you're right, it is a problem. But Rava says that's not only a problem for Rabbi Eliezer. That even the Rabbana would agree is a problem. This is not unique to Rabbi Eliezer's Shita, and that's what he says. What? This is Rabbi Eliezer, not the Rabbanan? Everybody would agree with that. That if a Kohen Gadol marries a Ketana, midrabanan, he's gonna have a problem when she comes of age. It's not just Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. El Amarova, Lola Mekeni Yejo, Kohen Hejot. Back to saying that Rabbi Eliezer's statement is about a Kohen Hejot. Bechashinan Shema Titpate Alav. We suspect, or we have suspicions, that this girl is susceptible to seduction. Because she's a ketana, we worry about that. She is very susceptible to seduction. And actually, truthfully, that's why the terminology for a seduced ketana is ones, is rape. It's not considered to be a seduction. When you're talking about adults, then we're talking about it's a seduction, then you can call it mifuta, because she's the badat. But over here, where you're talking about a ketana, who's not exactly a badat, if she is seduced, and supposedly in this consensual relationship, it's still considered to be ones. It's still considered to be rape. Exactly. Exactly what the law calls statutory rape, because she just doesn't have the ability to resist in that sense, even if it's consensual. So then, the Gemara says, Yochi Yisrael Nami. Why is this unique to a Kohen? It would be the same problem for Yisrael. For Yisrael, where his wife has an extramarital affair, he can't marry her. She's a surah to him. The answer is, Pituye Ketana Onesu. Just what I described to you here. The seduction of a ketana is considered to be, ones is considered to be rape against her will. By ones, ones be Israel, Mishra Shari. A woman who is raped for a husband who is Israel, that's not a problem because he continued to be married to his wife, he can take his wife back. On the other hand, a Kohen Hajot has a problem because now she has a classification of a zuna. Even though it wasn't her fault, even though it was something that was forced upon her, nevertheless, she's classified as a zuna now because she had a bia outside of her marriage, and that bia, even though it was against her will, makes her, classifies her as zona for a kohen, that will be a problem. So what Rava suggests over here, Rabbi Eliezer is making a suggestion. He's saying, kohanim should not marry ktanot, because they are susceptible to seduction, which, yes, will be classified as ones, but that classification of ones will not help for a kohen, because she'll then be a zona, and he won't be able to take her back, versus Yisrael, where that doesn't affect her, because he, even though she's classified as zona, Yisrael doesn't have that restriction. So he's giving good advice to a kohen. Don't marry ketana, because there's a high likelihood that you could end up with a problem here with a ketana who's susceptible to seduction. But Papa Amar, b'kohen gadol. But Papa says, no. Rabbi Eliezer's statement's about a kohen gadol. B'hai tanahu. And it's this tana, the tanya. Bitula yachol ketana. Says that the kohen gadol has to marry a bitula. You would think he can marry even someone underage or minor. Tamalomar isha. Isha bivtula ikach. I isha yachol bogeret. If you think an isha, you think also bogeret. Tamalomar bivtula. Hakeitzad, yatzta michlal katnut, vilichlal bagrut lo bata. She has to leave the world of being a minor. She has to be of age, which is 12. But she has to not reach the age of Bulgaret, which is 12 and a half. Which means that the bitula that is demanded for the Kohen Gadol would be between the age of 12 and 12 and a half. Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah only demanded that she not be a Bulgaret. Over here, we're suggesting now, we're probably suggesting that Rabbi Elazar demands not only is she not a Bulgaret, but she's also not a Ktana from the word Isha. And that would put her into that range of 12 and 12 and a half, where he can marry such a bitula. Again, two things. One is, if he's already married beforehand, this is not an issue. Number two is, 12, 12 and a half was probably the average age of when girls got married at that time. It was not unusual, it was not extraordinary for a girl to get married at that age. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak amar, hi Tanahu. Rav Nachman says it's this Tana, the Tanya, betula, ein betula, ela ne'ara. Betula is defined as nara, v'chein hu omer, and it says, by Rivka, v'nara tovat mareh me'od, Bitula, v'ish lo yida'a. The definition here of bitula is a nara. You see the association of the word nara with bitula, itzel rivka. And therefore, based on that definition, a bitula and nara are then associated. And since they're associated, that's what the meaning of bitula here is by Kohen Gadol. Right. Tosafot asks you a question. What David asks here, Tosafot says, what are you talking about? How could rivka be a nara? And Ne'ara implies that she is the age of 12 and 12 and a half. And the Midrash, Seder Olam Rabbah, tells us that she was 3 years old. So he says, maybe it's a Girsa mistake in Seder Olam Rabbah. He says, you can't do that because there are two calculations in Seder Olam Rabbah. One is that Yitzchak had the Akedah at 37. And in that same Parsha, the end of the Parsha of the Akedah, it says that Rivka is born. And we know that they're married at the age of 40. And then they wait till 60 before they have children. So you know that Rivka was 3 years old based on that. So he says, even if you think the Girsa mistake, the other calculation forces you to say that it's three. So he says, it's a problem here. And then Rav Shmuel Chassid Mishapira Hochiach Sheita Bat Yudalit. He found another midrash that says she was 14 years old. V'imaita Bat Yudalit Shinasa Az Cheshbon Mekuvan. That it makes a lot of sense. K'shinolad Yaakov Haita Bat Lamedalit. That means that she's 34 years old when she gives birth. She's 14. Again, Yitzchak is 40 when they get married, 60 when they have their children, 20 years later. That means she's 34 when she has the children. V'Yaakov haya ben saditet kishemeta Rivka. And that makes Yaakov 99 when Rivka dies. That's in this week's parsha, Alon Bachut, which is when Meineket Rivka comes to visit him. It says Alon Bachut, the Midrash starts on that. That shtei bichuyot, there were two cries over there, one over Meineket Rivka and one over Rivka herself. And at that time period, Yaakov is already 99 years old, meaning that he's 130 when he appears before Paro. And we know that Yosef at that time is 37, which would make him 93, and then he works 6 more years in the house of Laban, so that would make him 99. So he is 99 on the way home. The question is, did Rivka die at that point in time? That's the Drashat Chazal. But he says, Rav Shmuel Chassid Mishapira says, well, that would match up with this other Midrash Chazal, that he was 99 when Rivka dies, because then Rivka would have been 14 when she had Yaakov, and it would all match up. In the end, how does Tosafot solve the problem? Similar to what he says in the Gemara in Beitzah, as to whether the man fell on Yom Tov or not. Tzerech lamar, the Midrashot, Chalukim Zalzeh. The Midrashim argue. We have differences of opinions in the Midrashim. The Midrashim don't all have to be reconciled. They can't all be reconciled. We have differences of opinions. Said Olam Rabo thinks she was 3, another one thinks she was 14. Here it says Ne'ara. I don't know how he reconciles with that, because 14 is not exactly a Ne'ara either. She's already a Bulgaret. But at least we have differences of opinions within the Midrashim that seem to indicate that it's not so clear that she was 3 years old, the same way that we have the Midrashim by Avram Avinu as to when he discovered God. There are different Midrashim as to what age he was when he came to the realization that there is a God in the world. It gives you all of Nahor's children right after that Akedah. We read it on Yom Kippur. All the children, all the descendants of Nahor are brought right after the Akedah. So they are juxtaposed in the psukim. You could argue, and it's not a crazy argument, that that doesn't mean that they're dated, that the Akedah and the birth of Rivka are at the same time. So it's not a stretch to say that they were born at the same time, but it's also not muchrach that that's the case. The Torah many times segregates stories, and then it brings the next story. So there it brings the story of the birth of Rivka, because the next story is about getting Rivka as a wife for Yitzchak. So it puts that information there. It doesn't mean that that chronologically is exactly when it happened. You have that option to say, I mean, it's not far-fetched that the Midrash suggests that she was born at that time because they are adjacent and juxtaposed in the Psukim. And it's not Muchrach, you could say otherwise. No, but that's the Seder Olam Rabot with Shitato, that she was 3 years old and Yitzchak is 37. Right, according to the other Deah, if you think they were born at the same time and she's 14, that means that he wasn't 37 at the Akedah. I mean, that certain ages we know from the Torah, certain things, Chazal giving Midrashim to fill in the pieces. So for instance, by Yaakov, you can make two calculations. You can make a calculation starting from 130 years old when he's in Mitzrayim. And you can also go back and know from his birth up to a certain point how old he might have been. The problem with the 14 years is clearly that Chazal, through the Midrash, did that. There's no evidence in the Psukim of the 14 years. They do it based on certain juxtapositions, that Yishmael dies at the time that Yaakov gets the Brocha. These are all from Smichut of Psukim, that the Gemara does this. But none of those are Mukhrap to say that those 14 years are missing, but Chazal fill in those 14 years, and it works out in the calculation. But these are all based on Seder Olam Rabbah. He says there are other Midrashim that disagree. The other thing he notes is that when here the statement of Rav Nachman that ain't betulah la na'ara, Tosfot says, Kashalai Tana, amai itzrech b'shom makom nikhtov na'ara betulah. He says, I don't understand why the Torah ever has to write na'ara betulah. If the definition of a betulah is a na'ara, then why do you have to write na'ara betulah is redundant? So he says, that is a question we have to leave because I don't know what he's going to do with that, but na'ara betulah is completely unnecessary now because we've defined betulah as na'ara. It's just the question that he leaves over according to Rav Nachman Shita. Right now, Rabbi Lazar Omer, Panui Abal Pnuya, Shelo L'Shem Yishut, Asa Zona. Amar Rav Amram, Ein Alocha Ki Rabbi Elazar. We quoted this earlier when we tried to put the position of Rabbi Elazar Ben Yaakov and Rabbi Lazar together. We said we can't do that because Alocha is like Rabbi Elazar Ben Yaakov and Alocha is not like Rabbi Elazar. And that's over here. Rav Amram says that Alocha is not like Rabbi Elazar, and a woman who has Bia outside the context of marriage is not classified as a zona. Now again, that doesn't mean that if she's mufkeret, that she's not classified as a zona, but here it's just if she has a bi'ah outside of the context of marriage, that doesn't automatically make her into a zona. Okay, next Mishnah. This next Mishnah leads us into some major sugyot. One of the major sugyot is piria virivya. It says here, lo yivatel adam mi piria virivya, ilayim ken yesh lo banim. A person may not desist from the mitzvah of piria rivya, unless he has children. Beit Shammai omrim shnei zicharim, he has to have a minimum of two male children. Beit Hillel omrim zachar unikeva, a male and a female. Shnemar zachar unikeva biram. That God created them male and female, and that is where the mitzvah of piria rivya is mentioned, where Hashem creates man and woman, that's where the mitzvah of piria is mentioned in that context. So the assumption is that a male and a female is the accomplishment of that mitzvah of piria rivya. It's not clear here whether the opinions are mutually exclusive, which means that is Beit Shammai saying afilu shnei zecharim? He would agree that a zechar nekeva is also considered to be piria rivya, or is he saying exclusively shnei zecharim as opposed to zechar v'nekeva? Is Beit Shammai's position exclusive, or is it just saying also, which is that Beit Hillel says zechar v'nekeva? Seemingly Beit Hillel is saying zechar v'nekeva only, even though there's an opinion that says even Beit Hillel would agree by shnei zecharim. Because they view Beit Shammai as being Lechumra. If you look at the Tosfot Chad Mi Kamai here on the Daf, he mentions that Shnei Zecharim is actually a Chumra, not a Kula. And statistically, that is actually correct. The chances of having two Zecharim is statistically lower than having a Zechar Nekeva. If you have two children, there's a 50% chance that you will have a Zechar Nekeva. There's only a 25% chance that you will have Shnei Zecharim. So statistically, it's actually a Chumra to ask for Shnei Zecharim. And that's the way that Yerushalmi views Beit Shammai. And if that's the case, then certainly Beit Shammai would not agree with Beit Hillel. And maybe even Beit Hillel will agree with Beit Shammai that that's good enough because that's a Chumrah. But let's assume that Beit Hillel is Zechar Nekeva, must be. Beit Shammai, when they say Shnei Zecharim, do they mean exclusively Shnei Zecharim? Or do they mean, or also, or even Shnei Zecharim will qualify, not only Zechar Nekeva, but even Shnei Zecharim? That's not clear here. The Gemara says, "Ha yesh lo banim, mipiria rivya batil, mishado batil." If he's already accomplished the mitzvah piria rivya, he may then desist from piria rivya, but he may not desist from having a wife. Misayile the Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel. That helps us from the statement that Rav Nachman makes the name of Shmuel, Amar. Afo pish yesh lo dam kama banim. Even though a person has many children, asur la'amod below isha. It's improper for him to be without a wife. Shenemar lo tov heyot adam livado. A man should not be alone. Rabbi Avadi Yosef uses this in a tshuva that I brought earlier with regards to a man that was in Sao Paulo that had married a woman, and for whatever reason the marriage didn't work out. He wanted to give her a divorce. The woman is misarevet, doesn't show up in Beit Din. They can't give her a get. And therefore this man is stuck married to this woman because of the Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom. and he wants to get married now. He wants to build a family, and this woman is preventing him because she won't accept a get to free him of that marriage. And they say the Heter Meir Rabbanim, they can't find 100 rabbis in Sao Paulo. It's not going to be easy. So what should they do? So Rav Avad Yosef quotes this as part of his Heter for this man to go get married. He's done everything in his power to divorce this woman. And it's really her fault that he's going out with the Cherem Degar Geshom. And one of the things he mentions over here is that the Gemara says that a person may not be without an Isha. And he says, Achat Kama V'Kama, a young man of his age, where, of course, the hormones are much stronger, and he wants to be Mekayim a family. He hasn't been Mekayim Peri Rivya. Certainly, he shouldn't be without an Isha. And in Shulchan Aruch, it's quoted as well, the Alocha, that single man may not be without a woman. And even there, they say, Kofinoto, that a man who reaches a certain age and doesn't get married, we force him to get married and find a wife, because a man without a wife at that age is only going to end up in trouble. We don't do that anymore today. But it is true that we try to recommend that at certain ages, boys get married and they don't just let it drag out, because again, it only leads to problematic behavior. So this is suggested by the Mishnah that having children is only a solution to the problem of Peri Rivya, doesn't solve or doesn't exempt one of the need to have a wife. And therefore the diuk out of the Mishnah is that Bitul Peri Rivya is okay when you have children, but Bitul Isha is not okay. Ikadamre, there are those that read it this way. Hayish lo banim batil mi peri rivya u batil nami misha. That the Mishnah is miduyak, that you can also not have peri rivya and also not have a wife. Now, what's the diuk here? How do you get that diuk? Ratosud says, v'hai lishna daik mi delog tani lo yisa adam isha sheina bat banim. Ilayim ken yesh lo banim. Unless he does have children. So where it says, name it avi tiyuf to the Rav Nachman and Mashmol. If you read the diuk out of the Mishnah that way, then Nachum Bar Shmuel is problematic. Lo, ein lo banim no se isha bat banim. Yesh lo banim no se isha de la bat banim. That's the answer. The diuk is ein lo banim. If he doesn't have children, no se isha bat banim. Then he has to marry a woman who can bear children. Yesh lo banim. If he has children, no se isha de la bat banim. Then he can marry a woman who also does not bear children. So the diuk out of the Mishnah is not that he does not have to have a wife. But the diuk out of the Mishnah is that he doesn't have to have a childbearing wife. And that's what you have to say. When you say that, the Mishnah is miduyak, that a person, lo yivadel adam mipiri rivim, ken yesh lo banim, which makes it sound like he is then allowed not to have a wife. That's not what it means. It means that he's then allowed to have a wife that doesn't bear children. But he still has to have a wife. And that's why Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel read the Mishnah, that even though it's miduyak, that it sounds like he doesn't have to have a wife, they'll say that doesn't mean he doesn't have to have a wife at all. It means he doesn't have to have a wife that bears children. But he has to have a wife. And that wife can even not bear children. So the fact that the Mishnah didn't use the Lashon of Lo Yisa Adam Isha Shein Ba Bat Banim, since it didn't express it that way, they assume that it means the diuk is, he doesn't have to have a wife at all. But Shmuel Amar Rav Nachman reads it, no, don't be medayek that way, read it as if that's what's written in the Mishnah. Nafkamina, Limkor Sefer Torah Bishvil Banim. The Nafkamina in this case is whether he has to sell a Sefer Torah for children. Now, as Tosfot points out, this nafkamina doesn't mean nafkamina like this is halachic nafkamina. We already gave you halachic nafkamina. The halachic nafkamina is if you have children, you don't have to have marry a woman who bears children. You can marry a woman even who doesn't bear children. So we already have halachic nafkamina. So this can't be the only halachic nafkamina, but hainami nafkamina. This is also nafkamina, where the one is permitted to sell a sefer Torah in order to marry a woman, in order to facilitate his marrying a woman. Well, that'll make a difference depending on whether he has children or not. If he doesn't have children, then he will have to sell the Sefer Torah in order to perform the mitzvah Peri Rivya. To support a wife, he doesn't have the money to whatever the reason is to get married. Right, he has a Sefer Torah. You're not allowed to say it or sell a Sefer Torah except for three things. One of them is Isha. It's for a woman. So what they're saying here is this is also an afkamina. When you say that for Isha, that only means if he hasn't had children, he hasn't become the mitzvah Peri Rivya, then we override the restriction of selling a Sefer Torah to allow you to accomplish the mitzvah Peri Rivya, which is a significant fundamental mitzvah, and therefore we allow you to do it. Because of the chashivut of the mitzvah, we allow you to do it. But in a case where he's already accomplished Peri Rivya, and it's only to have an Isha, then we don't allow you to sell a Sefer Torah in that instance. That's one way to explain it. Vodo Miri also brings another nafkamina, which is interesting. The Matzah the Meimar, David Hilo Yeshlo Banim, Lolam Mitzvah Lisa Bat Banim. That even after he has children, and he's Mekayim a Peri Rivya, it's a mitzvah to marry a woman who can still bear children. Elamoldu the Hechad the Tzarech Limkor Sefer Torah, Bishvil Bat Banim. If he has to sell a Sefer Torah to make that, to get that way, then Kevin Yeshlo Banim, Lo Yimkor, Mechar Shemotzei Shena Bat Banim. The Ri says that he should be married to a woman. So he can sell a Sefer Torah to ensure that the woman that he gets as a childbearing woman. But if he's already accomplished the mitzvah of Piruvia, then let him go with the woman who's not childbearing, and that'll be fine. That suffices because he already accomplished Piruvia. Look, the better to have a woman who's childbearing. But if only way to get a woman who's childbearing and he's already accomplished Piruvia, don't sell a Sefer Torah to do that. Take a woman who is not childbearing. So in that way, it'll be another different type of nafkamina, which is the upgrade. We won't let you upgrade the wife by selling the Sefer Torah. If it's for fundamentally to get a wife that is necessary, then that's fine to sell the Sefer Torah. But to upgrade from a woman who is not a childbearing to a woman who is childbearing, that we won't let you do if you've already accomplished the mitzvah Piruvia. Obviously, if you haven't, then we're going to tell you you have to do it in order to accomplish the mitzvah Piruvia. Right? I'm just going to read a drop more because tomorrow's daf is very long. My tamayo de Beit Shammai. What's the reasoning behind Beit Shammai that says Shnei Zecharim? Yofina mi Moshe. They learn from Moshe. Dichtib, Bnei Moshe, Gershom, Eliezer. We only find that Moshe has two children, and his two children are two sons. Ubeit Hillel, Yofina mi Biato shel Olam. And Beit Hillel, on the other hand, learns out from the creation of the world. So Beit Shammai, Lalfei mi Biato shel Olam. Beit Shammai, why don't they learn out from creation? Ein Donim Efshar, Mishi Efshar. You can't be Don Efshar. Efshar is a case where people can bear children. From Efshar, which is the first Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava were created by God. But God had to create a male and a female, otherwise it wouldn't be able to sustain itself, the human race. So he was forced to produce or create a male and female, because otherwise there would be no continuation of the world. So that's a hechrech of Efshar any other way. But Efshar, that's not a proof to where people are bearing children in a normal manner. Why don't Beit Hillel learn out from Moshe? Moshe did this of his own volition. The Daniel, Shlosha Dvarim Asa Moshe Midato, Viskima Dato Ludata Makom. Moshe does three things of his own volition, and Hashem gives him a stamp of approval. Perash Min Aisha, he separated from his wife. Now he separated from his wife because of the necessity that he spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the time. Hashem appears to him Panim El Panim. In Parshat Shlach, when Miriam speaks about Moshe, Hashem comes to the defense of Moshe and says, you guys think that you get Nivuah, that your Nivuah is like Moshe? No, you Miriam, you Aaron are still together with your wives because your Nivuah is very different than Moshe's Nivuah. Moshe's Nivuah is Panim al Panim, number one. Number two is at any time, Hashem appears to him. Therefore, Moshe is separated from his wife and Hashem agrees that that was the right decision in defending him. In Parshat Shlach, Hashem defends Moshe's position. Vishiberet aluchot, he smashed the luchot because of the ego, the luchot rishonot. Vosif yom echad, and he added a day to Mamad Har Sinai before Matan Torah. He adds on a day, and all of these issues, Hashem was maskim ledato. Hashem agrees to what he did. After the fact, he gives a stamp of approval. So tomorrow we'll go through each one of these items too. It's also Gemara and Shabbat Daf Pei Zayin, that we saw this before, but we'll go through each of these items to see where Moshe did this of his own volition, where we see he did it, and number two is where does HaKadosh Baruch Hu give him the stamp of approval, what he did was correct. But what Beit Hillel is saying is Moshe is not good evidence. Moshe is separated from his wife because of his circumstances. It was unique circumstances, and therefore, almost in the same sense that you can't don Efshar Mishi Efshar, in that Moshe as a case is in a horat sha'ah. He's an unusual individual. Moshe is a once-in-a-lifetime type of individual, and he's separated from his wife. To say that he only had two sons, the proof from that is not a fair proof, because he's separated from his wife, not necessarily because he was Mekayim Piru Rivia, but because he was speaking to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he had to separate from his wife. Beit Shammai will answer, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't keep Piru Rivia. He had to keep the mitzvah. So two sons must have been the mitzvah, and he only separated after that. So there's the machlok you have here between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So the source for the fact of whether two zicharim or zachar nikeva is the accomplishment of the mitzvah, period, rivya. Okay, we'll stop here. Five lines down on the top of Samach Bet Amud Aleph.